And thank you so much to our great underwriters. We love all of those members of our community and what they do for us. And thank you for keeping us on air here on KKCR. This is Paul, and it's my first week bidding a farewell to Robin, who's been on the show for a few years and has left an indelible mark on this program as well as on my heart. A longtime friend of mine here, probably, well, close to 20 years now on Kauai. So much love to her, and I know that she supports this program moving forward and on and continuing to share information that is valuable to the farmers and gardeners of Kauai, the Hawaiian Islands, and beyond. So we're going to do that. We're going to jump right into our program and go to our celestial session for today. And this session is beginning with our Hawaiian moon reading of the day, brought to us by the 2015 Hanalei Moon and Tide Calendar, a Hanalei Watershed Hui publication, as well as the U.S. Naval Observatory's Astronomical Applications Department providing some of the data here. But today's Hawaiian moon is Ole Pau. This is in the Emi, or diminishing, Anahulu, which is the third Hawaiian week in the Hawaiian moon month. And Ole Pau rose over Kauai at 1:01 a.m. this morning. She reached her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 7:31 a.m., and she'll set at 1:57 p.m. this afternoon. 37% of the moon's beautiful face is illuminated today. And we had last quarter moon yesterday at 2:24 a.m., so the moon is getting smaller. We're approaching new moon. Ole Pau, the last of three Ole moons in the waning phase of the Hawaiian moon month. And as far as information that is relevant to us planters, this is not generally considered a good planting day from the Hawaiian moon perspective, not good for planting or fishing. It's thought to be windy, the tide's running high, however, a good time for weeding and other activities, and so it's a good time to get lots of other things done in the garden. And compost making is ever on my mind. I never seem to have enough of that stuff. So I'm definitely going to be putting more effort into that coming up soon, and maybe even today. As far as the biodynamic look at things, which was a portion of the show always brought to us by Robin, I'm happy to report to you that Robin is continuing to be involved in the show in the sense of giving us that Hawaiian moon, or rather the biodynamic forecast for the week. So this biodynamic look at things brought to you by Robin of Heaven on Earth starts. We're in the descending moon phase right now. That signals a good time for planting all this week. So Wednesday, today, through Thursday, the moon is in Leo, a fire sign, which means it's a good time to work with your fruiting plants and good plants to put into, to be planting right now, peas, beans, cool season tomatoes, and fruit trees would be great fruiting plants to be either working with or planting. Then starting on Friday, the moon enters Virgo, which is an earth sign, and that means it's a good time to be working with our root plants. And Robin recommends beets, turnips, carrots, which I'm really looking forward to getting going again. I also believe it's a great time for that. And also from the perspective of growing carrot seed, in my brief experience, it's been a really good time because as we round the corner and pass the winter solstice, that can be a good time to signal carrots for flowering. So this seems like a good time to get them in. Radish and kala would also be, depending on where you're located, good crops to plant at this time. And that's the biodynamic look at things for today. And moving on, we are really happy right now to be joined in studio by a good friend, somebody who's really jumped in with both hands and feet to help us out at the Kauai Food Forest. And we're going to be talking about an upcoming workshop this weekend. I'm speaking about David Watmore. David first visited Kauai in 1976. And after several visits, I think he really fell in love with the place, and evidenced by the fact that he bought a 10-acre farm in Kilauea in 1985, planted it a couple years later, and he's been growing tropical fruit ever since. David started out with a focus on citrus, which has shifted over the years to still include citrus, but also now focusing on mangoes and exotic varieties. David's been a member of the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers Association for over 20 years, and he serves as the vice president of the Kauai chapter. His produce is available at the Namahana Farmers Market on Saturdays here in the Kilauea area. And he's lead instructor of a one-day workshop on follow-up fruit tree pruning that's going to happen this Sunday at the Kauai Food Forest in Kalihiwai. We have a lot of stuff to talk about today, so without further ado, I'm going to welcome David to the microphone. David.
Thank you, Paul.
It's great to have you in studio.
I am so happy to be here on live radio on our very own listener-supported KKCR. I mean, really, I'm not just putting in a plug. I'm really happy to be here.
Well, I believe you. You're a very genuine guy, and your enthusiasm flows over all kinds of different things that enrich our community, but obviously fruit trees are one of the things that enrich our lives the most. So
I think we want to mention the time for that pruning workshop.
We sure do. Okay, so we'll do that in a few times during the show.
Once right now, maybe.
Sure. So the follow-up fruit tree pruning workshop is going to happen this Sunday, November 8th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., and it's located at the Kauai Food Forest in Kalihiwai. If you want to read all about it, you can go to our website, ribg.org. And if you follow the link on the front page, you'll be able to reserve yourself a spot as well for that workshop. So this is a follow-up. We held our first workshop with David back in the beginning of July and then extended that a few weeks later because we didn't actually get through our 85 fruit trees of over 50 varieties that we have at the food forest. And it's really interesting because each variety presents a different challenge based on its inherent growth pattern as well as how to form the tree best based on the knowledge of how the tree can best be managed. And David, we're really grateful that you brought your expertise because you were familiar with every tree we had practically.
Just about. There was a couple that I always learn new things whenever I go to somebody else's planting, and I learned some things there myself.
Yeah. So we're going to start out by focusing in on the importance of follow-up pruning. Mm-hmm. And we'll back up a little bit and talk about just why is it important to prune a fruit tree in the first place. Then we'll move on to the importance of following up the initial pruning.
Right. I've kind of made up a list of some of the benefits of pruning fruit trees, and it's not complete by all means, but it's a longer list than I found anywhere else. So I'm kind of proud of myself for coming up with this for you. Believe it or not, some pruning can actually save the life of your tree. So, for example, if your tree is too tall, storm's coming, you know, the whole thing can tip over.
You've seen this
firsthand. Well, right here in Kilauea, I was renting a house, and I had a lychee tree in my backyard that I had pruned it down really well to maybe half of even the height that it was. But a good windstorm came along, and it snapped off right at the base, and it never grew back. That was it. So even though I thought I'd pruned it enough, even then it wasn't enough. So
right. Now, we often hear people, or I've at least heard the idea a few times from different people that if a hurricane was coming, that they would radically prune back their trees. Is that something you'd recommend?
Yes. In fact, you know, I had my fruit trees in the ground during Hurricane Iniki, and I did that, and it did save them. I just went out with my chainsaw, and I was reckless. I hacked them short. The ones that were heavy with fruit were weighted down. They were okay, but the other ones, I just cut them really short, and I don't think I only lost but maybe one fruit tree out of about 700. So,
wow.
Yeah. But I did have good wind breaks, too. That's important.
Right.
So another benefit of pruning is that you can keep your tree in a manageable size, and many of us are backyard farmers, and we're in a limited space, and this is really important. We don't want it rubbing up against the house and tearing our shingles off and going into the neighbor's yard and creating problems. And So, I mean, that's another really good reason for – and when you prune it, you want to know how to prune it in a way that's going to help keep it in that space and yet still stay productive and nice looking, too.
Now, a lot of people who have backyard plantings, like myself from times past or even the present, we tend to plant things too close together. And so I'm wondering if pruning at the right time or with the right technique, because I've heard about these radical pruning techniques, almost bonsai in style, would allow of tree planting where traditionally you'd say they're too close, but you could actually achieve healthy growth of trees at a close spacing, giving you more diversity in your small backyard.
Yes. If you're willing to go to the effort to do extensive management, you can plant your things very close together and you can get very high yields in a small area in a backyard, trellising, things like that. But that takes a tremendous amount of follow-up. In some place like the food forest, we're not going in that way. We're not doing high management. We're trying to create sort of a low management scenario that produces a fair amount of yield, using, you know, natural inputs and as sustainable of a way as possible. Isn't that right, Paul?
I would say that's true. And then that's also tempered by the fact that because we're creating a multi-story food forest, that we are going to be spacing our trees not only horizontally as we traditionally think, but also vertically speaking, so that we may allow, in order to allow for a more natural forest-like environment with a higher level of diversity and production, even if each individual tree doesn't produce as much, that we get a greater amount of diversity of production, that we'll be pruning some, we'll be allowing some trees to go higher or maybe even pruning off the lower branches to allow a sub-canopy species to be growing that may be at a closer spacing than would be traditionally used in an orchard setting.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to sort of repeat and expand on something you just said. Different species of fruit trees can require completely different pruning strategies. And what I've even found is different varieties of fruit trees of the same species, for example, different varieties of tangerines, require a completely different pruning strategy. Some of them grow completely upright with too many uprights, and you have to thin them out and whatnot. Other ones tend to grow sideways, like grapevines. And so knowing your tree and its growth habit is a really important thing. And this is something, if you come to this workshop on Sunday, you'll see, because we did the first pruning on these trees. They're how many years old, Paul, now?
They've been in the ground almost 3 years, 3 years on the 1st of December, yet many of the trees were in pots preceding that. It's not that we had direct seeded them. And in fact, some of those trees may be as old as 5 or 6 years old because they've been waiting in large pots to be planted, like the citrus that you've seen growing so healthfully and producing so much already were in pots for quite a long time.
Yeah, so we did the first pruning on most of them in July. A few of them weren't even quite ready for that. So we'll be doing the first pruning on some trees this time, but you'll be able to see the results of the first pruning, and then what our follow-up will be. I wanted to say that, when you prune the trees, well, let me back up a little bit. In Hawaii, in general, you see a lot of these huge old mango trees, huge old lychee trees. The philosophy used to be, the old school way of thinking was that if you cut a tree or trim it back or whatever, that you might reduce its yield or vigor. But what's really happened is that when a tree gets too big, it's too hard to take care of, it's too hard to harvest, and you usually end up getting nothing off of it. The only exception would be if you had a huge amount of area, unlimited amount of water, and if you had a cherry picker, you could just plant your trees out in a big field and just let them go gangbusters. And it wouldn't be the highest yield per, you know, square foot of area, but they would do pretty well that way.
And when you're saying a cherry picker, this isn't a handheld tool.
No, I'm talking about the truck with the lift and all of that. But that's a lot of expense and work. So most of the time, the trees are going to be kept low, and that's for many, many reasons. Ease of harvest. You can see the fruit. You can pick it easier. You can spot diseases and insect problems. And ease of maintenance. It's easier to prune if you're going to do any kind of spraying or bending and twisting your branches and managing them. They're within reach. You won't have to use ladders so much, which saves time, and it's a lot safer to be standing on the ground. anyway, sometimes even the way you prune your trees can give make trees yield earlier. I was at the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers Conference this fall. We had a speaker who was a farmer from Australia, and he showed us pictures of a durian tree that he had. And, you know, he took really good care of it and fertilized, watered it, but he was training it on a trellis. They use trellising systems there because of, they get so many hurricanes. And he said his tree was 5.5 years in the ground, and he got 22 kilos of fruit from that tree. Now, I've never heard of anything that early and that much. Usually, durians, it's 10 to 20 years. So that's maybe an extreme example. Everybody isn't going to get results as good as that, but it just shows you that it can be. It is possible.
Yeah. Outrageous.
Now, also.
So that's almost. I had to do the calculation there because I'm not conversing in kilos. That's okay. Almost 50 pounds.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And as you know, there's quite a shortage of durians.
Yeah.
Keeping your tree well pruned also can increase its longevity. I know with the Satsuma tangerines in Japan, they do real regular, careful pruning in Japan. There are a lot of master pruners there. And when you keep your tree well pruned, it can increase its longevity. They have little tangerine trees there. They're over 300 years old. And that's an example of that. Also, by pruning your tree properly, and I can't tell you all the details on how to do it right here because that would, you know, take hours, but you can increase the quality of your fruit, the size of your fruit. You can increase your production. That's one of the main things for fruit trees, for pruning them properly. You can increase your production. In some places now, like in India, South Africa, they're actually growing mango orchards where they're growing them 1 meter, the trees. They're planting the trees 1 meter by 2 meters apart. That's like about 1 yard by 2 yards apart. But they prune them real, they keep them right in that same size. And what it does is they're in full production in 3 years, and they get more than double the yield per acre of larger trees. But it does,
outrageous.
It's a lot more planting. You need a lot of planting material, and you need a lot of guys out there. But it's real easy because you just walk along. Everything you're dealing with is right at head height. Right. You're not bending over. You're not reaching. Right.
Well, that sounds extreme, but the important thing is it demonstrates the potential and the principle of it, which is that the more that you care for your tree, the more you interact with it from a pruning and management standpoint, it's just going to keep giving you more.
As long as you know what you're doing. Now, an improper pruning can actually set you back. If you over prune a tree or try to achieve all your pruning goals in one fell swoop, you can really stunt your tree, which in some cases you might want to if it's too vigorous. But you also then can develop all kinds of suckering, which you know, long water shoots and things that are really hard to get the tree then back into a good bearing canopy.
And that was why you were insistent that when we did the first workshop back in July, that we had to schedule the follow-up.
Yes. Yes, because if you're going to do, I think I made a note on this, when you're going to do any heavy pruning, such as remedial pruning, a tree that's been let go for too long and you're trying to correct it. You don't want to do it all in one step. You want to do it incrementally. And then when you do cut it back, there will be a lot of suckering. So regular follow-up is essential to achieve the goals, because sometimes if you prune without follow-up, it could be worse than no pruning at all.
Yep.
So I would just want to increase regular incremental pruning is almost always the best. There might be some exceptions to that rule, but that's mm-hmm. a pretty good general rule. And that's why I think you guys can learn, and girl, ladies and gentlemen, everybody, you'll learn some things by attending this pruning workshop, because we're going to be doing the follow-up, showing you what to do after you've done a first pruning. And some of the trees we did have to prune kind of heavily because they were huge. Some of those Rellinia trees, where they were like 15, 20 feet tall.
Right.
And they could have even used a first pruning earlier.
Yeah. And if we have a mind, we might even get around to pruning our bread nut tree, which is probably up to 30 feet tall right now. It sure is impressive, and it seems sometimes a big compromise to cut a tree that's growing so vigorously and so beautifully just in its natural state. So you really have to ask yourself, what's your objective, And then we really need to be realistic about the fact that a tall tree is in the crosshairs for significant damage, not only to itself, but perhaps collateral damage to a building, a car, or a person from breaking in a strong wind. So I want to let you know this is In the Garden on the Farm on Kuwait Community Radio. Our guest in studio today, David Watmore. He will be teaching a follow-up fruit tree pruning class, workshop really, this coming Sunday at the Kauai Food Forest in Kalihiwai from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. And we say that's our timing, but in fact we know that if you're really interested, we're going to be there after 1 o'clock. So basically, if you can only block out 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., you'll go away with a lot more knowledge. Your confidence of being able to do this yourself will increase, but there'll be a few more hours probably of us finishing up the work because there's a lot of trees to visit. And so know that it will extend beyond the 1 p.m. time. So come prepared if you do decide to join us. And for more information, you can visit our website, ribg.org.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, I have so much respect for Paul. He's such a good communicator, and he's really, really in tune with the plants out there. I just can't say enough about how much I respect him.
Likewise.
Well, thank you. I want to give another example just to scare you guys a little bit on why you should be concerned about your fruit trees. There is a type of citrus tree. It's called a honey murcot. You may just know it as a honey tangerine from Florida, but it's not really a tangerine. It's a murcot. Those trees are an example of one that when they fruit too heavily, as they often do, they have on years and off years. And when they fruit really heavily, if you don't prune that tree or thin the fruit, that tree will die within 1 year from overfruiting. They just get crazy on fruiting and they kill themselves. Wow. Giving fruit. Uh-huh. Another thing is sometimes a tree that's been attacked by bugs or damaged or harmed or suffering, sometimes a little pruning back is good. Or if there's been root damage, somebody digs a ditch near your tree or it's been flooded and your tree has, had root damage. Anyway, sometimes you prune your tree back so that just to save the tree.
And would you actually do root pruning in certain situations after the tree? I know people do it when it's still in the pot, but once it's planted, is root pruning ever recommended?
Commercially, sometimes root pruning is done. It's done when you have a tree that's too vigorous and maybe the roots are going out into another area and taking energy from or taking water and nutrients from other trees. But yeah, you would do root pruning to reduce vigor. And in some species of trees, I'm not real familiar with this, but I know they do it in a way to help induce flowering. But it's different. It's different for different trees. You'd have to know the specifics of what you're working with.
Well, I can already imagine some follow-up workshops in the future that might include that as well as, and I'm not sure you would describe it as pruning really, but preparing a tree that's already in production to hold the best quality fruit. And I'm thinking of a couple of different species, longan as well as loquat, I know are two fruit trees where the removal of a certain amount of flowers during that period will result in much better quality fruit. We're not quite there at the food forest in terms of the flower production, but do you consider that a pruning?
It would be a type of pruning. Yeah, I think they usually call it thinning of the fruit, but it is a type of pruning. I'm getting ready to do a lot of root pruning at my farm, but what I'm pruning is my windbreak roots are going in and stealing all the nutrients in my orchard.
You are not alone.
And they've even killed a lot of my trees. So I'm going to be doing a lot of trenching. People also do it with a tractor and they rip it. They get a hook in the back that they drag and it rips down deep. Right. But I'm going to go even a little bit deeper and it'll be more time consuming, but I'm going to use a trencher to really cut those roots. And I have to do it every few years.
Now, I've seen this windbreak at your farm, and it is the ironwood that I know a lot of people have trouble with. And in your assertion, is it a wrong choice of species for that windbreak, or is it just that the windbreak wasn't regularly managed, and maybe that makes it the wrong choice because it requires such regular pruning itself to keep those roots from spreading out?
I would say that all windbreaks require pruning and management. And I think that the ironwood is a good windbreak for a couple of reasons. One is that it is a nitrogen fixer, so it's actually adding nitrogen to the whole scenario. And another one is that the needles underneath are really good mulch, and they keep the weeds down, so there's less maintenance to do on the tree. It also doesn't seem to the insects don't hang out in there. It's not something, I mean, you can have a eucalyptus windbreak, and it can get insect pests that then spread into your fruit orchard.
Right.
With the ironwood, that's not true. So, and also where I'm at, I do get salt breeze off of the ocean. So the ironwoods are really good at blocking that. So for me, it's the ideal windbreak. I don't think it's even on the approved list for the NRCS anymore, but I'm highly in favor of it.
Okay, good to know. So as far as pruning goes, we're doing follow-up pruning, and I'm really interested for you to see the trees in their current condition, because they definitely have shot out a lot of new growth. We did one super radical pruning on a Mame Sapote that just had gotten too tall, and so you said it was actually the most radical pruning you'd ever done on a fruit tree, and I'm happy to say it's got a lot of new growth on it.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, it'll be a surprise for me, because I have not seen the trees since July. I have not had, being a farmer, I'm pretty busy. I haven't gotten a chance to go over there. But sometimes it's good. If you see your trees every day, you don't notice the changes. If you go away from them for a little while and come back, then you can really tell what's happening.
Right.
And when you're pruning, you're really anticipating what those changes are going to be. And if, you know, that takes, like I said before, the familiarity with the growth pattern of that tree. So a lot of it is we're kind of sort of predicting the future and what the tree would do if we didn't prune it, and what it's going to do if we did prune it.
Yeah.
So actually going out there and seeing the results, it'll be very interesting, even for the people coming for the first time, because you'll be able to see where we made the cuts, and you can kind of imagine what was there.
Right.
Now you can see what's come back and what we're going to do with it now.
Cool. It's going to be really fun. So this workshop coming up this Sunday, November 8th, from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Kauai Food Forest. We're also there on Saturdays, and we will be doing some clearing around a few of the fruit trees just so we can get at them, because we do have a lot more planted in the food forest than just the trees themselves, a lot of support species. And we're there each and every Saturday from 8:30 to noon, and then 2:30 to 5. That's our new work schedule. We're having a lot of fun, and you're welcome to join us there as well. This workshop coming up now, I'm wondering, I would say we would encourage participants to bring some mosquito protection, because depending on whether or not we have good trade winds, it can be a bit mosquito-y in there. But what other things would you recommend people bring to the workshop?
Water, mm-hmm. Bottled water, snacks.
And even a lunch, because it will be over the lunchtime.
Yeah, and we all tend to usually bring some fruit, various people, so there'll be a little bit of sharing, but it's not mandatory. But possibly, if the rain bothers you, a little rain jacket or a umbrella, because that can happen. We had some little rain showers when we did this before, but they were refreshing. It was hot out there, and we were miserable. When the rain showers came, we felt blessed.
Yes. Thank goodness for the change in the weather for the fall season. It's not going to be nearly as hot, we're hoping.
We're hoping.
So is there anything else about the workshop you'd like to address, or should we move on?
Well, we'll probably come back to it, but I'm really itching to talk about an organization that has really lifted me up and helped me to do what I'm doing, and I want to share this with everybody else.
Please.
That's the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers. It's a statewide organization of both backyard growers, commercial growers, enthusiasts, public officials that are involved in it.
Researchers,
yes. It's been in existence for 25 years, and I wasn't there at the very beginning, but almost. I've been a member, as Paul said earlier, for more than 20 years. Now, if you're interested in the organization, I'm going to give you the website right here.
Please.
I'll just say it, and then I'll go back and repeat it for you. It's HTFG.org. So it's a nonprofit organization, and it's H is in Hawaii, T is in tropical, F is in fruit, G is in growers. So that's HTFG.org. If you go there to the site, there's a place if you want to become a member, and I'll tell you in a minute what all the benefits of being a member are, but if you want to become a member, there's a thing that says click here for details.
And just make sure you don't mention any prices on air.
Okay. I'm glad. I was just going to say that. They do have different prices, though, for different categories. If your backyard, it doesn't cost much. Okay. On this website, even if you're not a member, they have links to conference proceedings. These are sort of, see, every year we have an annual conference and we bring in the best international experts that we can to speak to us and to learn from. And so the proceedings for about a dozen of our annual meetings are there. So there's some good information that you would not be able to find elsewhere. And if you're a member, you also get, we get regular emails about information that might be useful. We usually meet about once every 3 months. We've had a really good turnout at our meetings. We usually get 20 to 30 people, sometimes even up to 50 at each meeting. And it's very interactive. We all learn a lot from each other. We also have just recently planted a germplasm repository at down in Lawai.
A germplasm repository. What does that mean?
We planted a bunch of fruit trees that are ones that we think our members are going to want to grow more of and propagate from. So it's a source of genetic material for grafting, for getting seeds.
Fantastic.
And things like that. And if you're a member, then you have access to that as well. Now at our meetings, at our local meetings, we usually have little workshops or little informational speech, and we usually have a tour of somebody's farm or some facility that relates to our thing. And it's really a lot of fun. We have got a good group. In fact, there's a lot of chapters around the state, but I swear our chapter is the most active right now and the most fun. For many years, we didn't have one, but now we've been going for, I think, maybe about 10 years with our chapter here. So anyway, I just encourage you. It's a good place to get information. It's kind of a fun social thing. There's nothing bad about it that I know of. It's great. I'm the vice president of our local chapter. Scott Sloan, who works at the National Tropical Botanical Garden, is our current president. He's doing a great job, and I'm not sure right now just when our next meeting is, but if you join up, you will find out.
Fantastic, and we really appreciate the work, of course, of Ken Love, the director of the whole statewide effort, and his explorations and illuminations of varieties and species that we've never heard of, and encouraging people to consider different ways of marketing these products so that more people can go into the industry. Can't say enough about Ken.
Yeah, we learn about ways of doing value-added products. We've sponsored value-added workshops, or actually, intensive classes where people can get certification for making value-added products and being able to sell them in the local markets and that sort of thing. I'm just mentioning the ones that come off the top of my head. There's a lot of other benefits that do come from this. You get, discounts in prices at various merchants and things like that, too.
Cool. So we're talking about the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers Association.
Organization. Yeah.
Organization.
Well, we just call ourselves the Hawaii Tropical Fruit Growers. And it is an organization.
Great. And we are speaking with David Watmore. And he is a commercial fruit farmer here on Kauai. And his beautiful produce can be found at the Namahana Farmers Market on a Saturday. If you have, as I do, a great interest in engaging him in extended dialogue. He's a busy guy, and of course, if you come early in the market, he's working on getting his fruit sold. But if you have a real interest in connecting with him, show up sometime after noon there at the Namahana Farmers Market. You might be able to bend his ear with a question or at least make a connection. And thank you so much for really educating us all and doing it with your enthusiasm. And I think that as far as the value, another one of those values of the tropical fruit growers is that even in this day of the internet and so much information being available online, that some of the knowledge that's so important and foundational, you only really get through experience or through a one-on-one connection with people. And so when we held the last fruit tree pruning workshop and we were thinking, okay, what kind of supportive materials or handouts could we put together? I remember you telling me that, there's this one and there's that one and there's some of the basics, but so much of your knowledge and what makes you a good practitioner as well as an educator, is that you've spoken to hundreds of people at these tropical fruit growers meetings, visiting over 50 farms to see how other people do it. And even in this digital age, it seems like the personal one-on-one connection that you can make is where a lot of the gold is to be found.
Well, you know, what's interesting is I have a reputation at our annual conferences as the person that asks the most questions, and usually people like my questions. So I'm always just extracting more information out of our experts as much as possible. I corner them in the hallways afterwards and everything like that. But another thing that makes I don't want to just brag about myself or anything like that, but I have a scientific background. So when I learn new things or new techniques to try, I don't just believe it because some expert said it or whatever. I usually try to demonstrate it, and I usually try to do it with a control group. Like if I'm going to try a new technique, I do a new technique on one section and do the old technique on the other section, because I want to really know if it works. I don't want to just believe that it works because somebody told me and it sounds good. I like to look for the evidence.
Right.
And so, I mean, I don't do everything perfectly. I mean, I'm not right about everything, but I try to use an evidence-based approach to determine what I'm going to believe and to help guide me in my course of action. Right. And it's not foolproof, but it's pretty effective.
Yeah. Well, we benefit from it. So let's move on in our please.
Are we going to move on to my recommendations on planting, what trees to plant,
to plant? So we were thinking about the audience that would be perhaps listening to today's show, and I'm always hopeful that we have everywhere from somebody who has a casual interest in being a planter or at least an appreciation from the bounty that planters that they know or could come to know are growing and producing, all the way up to the seasoned commercial producer. But right in the middle there, maybe, or somewhere in between those two extremes, would be the new farmer, somebody who's looking to get into the market of growing fruit in this example, or perhaps it's even an experienced farmer who's looking at some new dimensions of, you know, a new venture, a new planting of something that would fit well within the market, that isn't being overproduced, but would actually be readily snatched up by various markets, whether it's farmers market or selling to restaurants, et cetera. And David's got some great recommendations for us.
Well, first I was going to say, if you're a backyard farmer and you want to plant a fruit tree, make sure you plant something that you like and that you can eat. Because you may not be marketing it or whatever. So you want to be sure you plant the varieties and that you like. But now Paul was referring to, if you're planting a little more than that, you got a little farm, you're thinking of doing a little bit of production for sale. Did you want to interject something?
Yeah, I would
there?
Say even to add to that, and this is something that our friend Felicia often reminds people and has occurred to me so many times, is if you just have room for a tree or two, you obviously want to plant something you like and want to eat, but you also want to think about what your neighbor has. So if your neighbor has an avocado tree and they can't possibly eat all of them, but they don't have a mango, then you could plant a mango or an ulu. And just think about that landscape level of food production. Get to know your neighbors better. What do they have? And maybe they'd be happy to share, and then you've got more of everything.
Yeah, and I like these little neighborhood fruit stands, the honor stands, the self-help ones. Because for people that have a small amount of production, it does help move the fruit at a cheap price. I mean, it competes with farmers like me, but I love it. I just love it. So now, if you were going to plant more than just for yourself and your neighbors a little bit, if you're going to sell, surprising to most people is that there is overproduction in many of the common fruits. Because things grow so well here. I have a list here of things that are in overproduction. And I would say citrus in general is in overproduction. I mean, some years there might be lean years where there's not overproduction, but almost every year has been overproduction. This last year was, I think, probably a quarter or a third of the citrus crop actually got consumed this last year. So a lot of it went to waste. Now, there are new varieties of citrus and things, and people are looking for specialty things. So there are new ones to plant. There are niches. But if you just go out and plant the same thing that everybody else has already planted, you'll have a hard time selling them, and B, if you drop the price way down below your cost, then you're really putting out a production, you're sort of putting out of business people that are trying to make a living at it too.
And you said citrus is particularly difficult because of the difficulty of the export.
Yes. Citrus is one of the things that cannot be exported to the 48 states. So therefore, and there's a lot of places that it cannot be exported to because it's a host of a fruit fly. Many of our fruits, I would say almost all of our fruits, there's a few exceptions, are hosts of the fruit fly. And that's why there's this quarantine. When you go to the airport and they want to check your bags and see if you got any fruit in there, because they don't want we've got med flies, oriental fruit flies, other things like that. And they don't want those infesting other areas where it could cause billions of dollars of damage to the fruit industry in the mainland. So in some ways, we're kind of limited. So when we get huge production here, well, there's Oahu, but they're actually growing a lot of fruit now on Oahu. They've got a lot of good farmland over there. So I would say if you are going to plant a lot of fruit trees for production, you really want to think about your marketing. And there's a lot of orchards already planted right now that aren't even in production. So production is really increasing, and demand is not increasing. Our population here is increasing very slowly. We are trying to replace, like in citrus, we're trying to get more local citrus sold because we still do import a lot from the mainland. We do want to replace that. But, that takes a lot. You've got to have good quality and regular availability. Another one is avocados. Those grow so good here. You can throw an avocado out the window of your car, an avocado seed, and come back 10 years later, there's probably going to be a tree there loaded with avocados, and there probably won't be that bad.
Right. Now, do you anticipate with the severe drought in California and the fact that that is a major avocado growing region that we may in the coming years be looked at as a viable source of avocados to ship to the mainland, or is that another fruit fly problem?
That's a possibility. I think they do have a protocol. These things keep changing, and I can't say I'm totally up to date, but I think that we now have a way of shipping Charwell avocados, I believe, to the mainland. There's a whole lot of things that have to be inspected and this and that and the other thing. Now, that's a possibility, but we can't grow a bunch of avocados over here just on the hope that on certain years they're going to have bad years and then we can fill in, because then what do you do with all the avocados on the other years?
Right.
So it does take some planning. But as I go through this list of things not to plant, keep in mind we're going to get to a list of things that I'm going to recommend. So there's things that I think should be planted more of, and I'm thinking there's these other things that we, for everybody's benefit, we don't want to plant more of.
Right. What else is on that list?
Well, actually, in a good year, mangoes were in overproduction. This was a year of overproduction of mangoes. They were hard to sell. You saw the people on the side of the road selling mangoes. And actually lychees, too.
Mm-hmm.
But mangoes are problematic because when the weather is... I see Paul is smelling a ripe mango right now.
Oh, my God. What is this variety? It's
that I used to call it the mystery mango, but I think it's a Hawaiian variety called Harders. I got it. It was mislabeled. When I got a bunch of them that I planted, and they were mislabeled, and it's been a frustration for me. But now I sort of like it.
It's got a butterscotch aroma to it that's just...
Uh-huh.
Absolutely intoxicating.
But with mangoes, they're more weather dependent, I think, than any of the other fruit crops that I can think of, because intermittent rain at the wrong time can either make it where they won't make blossoms, or if they do make blossoms, the blossoms will rot, or possibly even the fruit can rot off from various fungal related diseases.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's overproduction of mangoes. If somebody was going to put in a large mango orchard, they'd have to be thinking about how they could ship somewhere else, like Japan or mm-hmm. something else, because even Oahu has a lot. You should just really think twice if you're going to do that.
So, it's always that issue of seasonality. It's
yes.
like when it's off season, then anybody would buy a local mango, but they're not available. When they're seasonal, then
right.
it's hard to move them.
And that's what I've been working hard on with my mangoes, is I'm trying to find my niche, and I'm trying to develop the techniques for doing off-season mangoes, mostly, you know, by manipulating water, fertilizing, and pruning schedules. It's really complicated, and I'm not sure I'll even be able to fully understand it, but That's what I'm experimenting with.
Well, I'm sure you have other things on that list, but of the don't plant, but our time is running short, so I'm hoping we can take it to the encouragements that you're making for people.
Well, let me just quickly say the other ones that are in overproduction.
Okay.
Overproduction. Long gone, rambutan, lemons, and the limes. Of course, that's in the citrus.
Right.
You know, there's always a shortage of papayas at the market. These are pretty easy to grow. You could even grow in the backyard. They even grow better than in large commercial blocks.
Right.
But there's a lot of information available from the Extension Service on how to grow papayas. Now, the two other ones that only can be grown in specific circumstances, but these get a high price and they're in high demand, and that's mangosteen and durian. The mangosteen is not related to the mango. It's kind of a purple, round fruit. But what's good about it is it has a flavor that everybody likes it. It's 100% resistant to the fruit flies, and the skin is a very potent medicine that is really good for a number of things, very high in antioxidants. The other one is the durian, which people either really love it or they really hate it. And the people that really love it, they'll do anything to get it. And, of course, the people that hate it can't stand to be around it. But I get asked for that always at the market. I'm pestered. Where's some durian? How can I get some durian? Who's got some durian? Now, both of these fruits need lots
of water. I don't
have
durian, and it's your fault.
Yeah, they're kind of going like that. So both mangosteen and durian, though, they need a lot of water at their roots, or they need to be in a really wet and protected area. So if you live near a stream or a pond or a swamp, or you've got groundwater that's not too far down, you could be in a good location for these. Now, they both take a long time to fruit, and mangosteen is only grown from seed. There's only basically one variety, so there aren't a whole bunch of different ones. Durian, there's many different varieties, but I've never seen one that wasn't good. So those are two that I would really push. And believe it or not, bananas is one. If somebody could grow bananas, but they need good management now because we do have the banana bunchy top disease. They're becoming a rare fruit. They're becoming more and more scarce at the market, and they're in high demand. So bananas, papayas, mangosteen, durian, and I'll mention one other that's my favorite fruit, and that's the langsat. The Filipinos call it lansones. They either can grow from seed or grafted varieties. It's kind of a mild-tasting fruit. There may not be a huge market for this one, but right now the market is being underserved.
Well, as a true fruit lover, you've violated one of the, or it's not really a rule, but you've done one of the things that defines a fruit lover, which is a couple of months ago you told me that your favorite fruit was another fruit.
Oh, which one did I say?
Which is the petali. A relative of Articuno.
That might be my second favorite. But,
okay.
Yeah.
But that's what we do. Is when we have so much love in our hearts for these fruits, it's hard to say exactly which one is our favorite. We have the favorite of the minute. It's the fruit that's in front of us, as Uncle Jerry Konanui would say.
Can I mention the poi in your bowl? Briefly, one fruit that I have that's in season right now. Not a lot. I'm not selling it commercially, but it's one of my favorite fruits. It's called a mabolo, a Philippine persimmon. It's red and fuzzy on the outside. Yes. It has white skin, no seeds.
Are there improved varieties of those?
I think there are. I don't have access to them.
Okay.
But it's very seasonal, like the lychee. It's October, November. It's happening right now. They're beautiful. It's a very ornamental tree, and it takes up a small space, very upright. I love those.
Awesome. Well, we're going to take a little diversion here so we can get a slew of announcements out, and then we'll finish up with David in just a moment. We want to encourage you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy is in the studio from 1 to 3. 3 to 5, it's Shaka Kayaka with the Papule Show. And I do believe we have Surf Stories coming up with Scott Majerus as well, and lots of other great programming. So stay tuned here on KKCR, Kauai Community Radio. Announcements, we've got a bunch. If you are about learning about farming, this is your month. November is a huge month for education. It's going to start off, as far as I know, this Thursday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. It's a talk story with Dr. Koon Hui Wang. She is a specialist on cover crops from UHCTAR, the College of Tropical Agriculture. We've had her on as a guest on the show in times past, and she's just so super knowledgeable about nematodes and how to control them with cover crops. She's doing super great work. So this is Thursday night from 5 to 7 p.m. It's a free event at the KCC Sustainability Center, located at the KCC Farm. For more information, you can call the Go Farm Hawaii Program Director for Kauai, Eric Hansen, at 896-2793. Then this Saturday, it's the Kauai 9th Annual Arbor Day. It's being held from 9 a.m. to noon, or until all the plants are gone, which could be before noon, at the Kukui Grove Shopping Center in the parking lot behind Kmart. Nearly 1,200 plants will be distributed, including Puakenikini and Ulufiti, thanks to the Breadfruit Institute for making that variety available. And plants will be available on a first-come, first-serve basis. So I've participated on that. That's quite a lot of fun. And even if you can't make it there, it's Arbor Day, so plant a tree, everybody. Then on the next day, the fruit tree follow-up pruning workshop, which we've just spoken about, is happening Sunday from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Kauai Food Forest, Sunday, November 8th. For more information, you can go to ribg.org and to reserve your space as well. And then NTBG and Kauai Community College collaborating on a presentation next Tuesday on the Alula, entitled Alula on the Brink, Saving the Rarest of the Rare. This is 5:30 p.m. at the KCC Cafeteria. Join NTBG conservation biologist Shana Walsh as she discusses her research on the Alula, Brigamia insignis, a plant known only from Kauai and Niihau that is believed to be extinct in the wild. I saw one of the last ones before it disappeared. And NTBG has been doing great conservation work on that and so many other rare native plants for decades and decades. So that'll be a very interesting talk. Then coming up next on the following Sunday, November 15th, it's the One Song Farm Garden and Permaculture Workshop from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Located in lush Kilauea. Sun Hadley, Olivia Wolf, and Chuck Esten are the instructors. The morning session, a two-track program on gardening, an advanced and basic track, and then in the afternoon, the permaculture workshop from 1 to 4. We're going to have Sun on the show next week, and we'll hear more information. But if you want to reserve your spot now, you can call 652-1591 or email cesten@gmail.com. Then looking a little further ahead, a Wild Food Book Tour coming up with Sunny Savage from November 20th through the 23rd here on Kauai, although she's visiting all the Hawaiian Islands. And we'll have her as a guest in a couple of weeks. 866-8294 is her number, or Sunny Savage, SunnySavage.com for more information there. We're also going to be holding a biochar workshop on Sunday, November 22nd from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Kauai Food Forest. More details to be announced, but if you want to find out information about the presenter who has a tremendous encyclopedic knowledge of biochar as well as how to easily make it in your backyard or small farm, you can visit his website, biocharrevolution.com, but keep an eye on ribg.org for the details on that workshop. This is a bit out of order, but the 5th Annual Hawaii Farmers Union United Convention is happening next week from Friday through Sunday, November 13th through 15th. This is going to be held in Wailuku, Maui. And for more information on that convention, hfuuhi.org. And I know that the Hawaii Farmers Union Kauai chapter meeting is going to be coming up next Wednesday from 6 to 8:30 at the Anahola Clubhouse as well. So lots of ways to get more akamai and have better results. But we sure hope to see you, and you would consider joining us for the follow-up pruning workshop this weekend, or rather to say Sunday, with David Watmore, who's joined us in studio today. And I want to thank you so much, David. The time, as we expected, just flew by.
It sure did. Can I make a quick comment about the workshop?
Please.
The last one we had was really fun. I think this will be the same way. There was a lot of participation from the people that came and helping to actually make the cuts. There was plenty of opportunity for people to ask questions. And actually, everyone contributed some knowledge. I mean, we all learned things. We even had a trained arboriculturalist?
Arborist.
Arborist, sorry. Yeah, there. And he contributed a lot, but he learned things as well, even though he was really trained in the subject. So it's a big exchange of information. It's really a lot of fun. And because there is such a variety of fruit trees planted at the food forest, it's a perfect demonstration project for learning how to prune different types of fruit trees with different growth habits. This is really an opportunity. I hope you can take advantage of it.
Right on. And yes, I'm glad you mentioned that. I want to give so much thanks to our local supporters, because when you come to these workshops, you are supporting our nonprofit Regenerations. And it's a super team, and a lot of friends turned out. And part of what I love about what we do is that the people who are really excited about it don't just talk about it. They do it. And they're an essential part of the team. Even if they come as a student, they're teaching us, and they're doing a lot of the work too, which is how you learn how to do it.
And I just wanted to say I have a lot of enthusiasm for this, and I'm just participating in it because it is my passion. I'm not doing this myself to make money or anything like that. I just really want to help, you know, forward this program and help support the food forest as well.
Right on. David, thank you for your generosity of spirit and action. And we want to encourage you to tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. And please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy right now. And this is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola K284AL, Hale Iva. Aloha, everyone.
Aloha, you are tuned to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ, Anahola, K284AL, Hale Iva, and you are listening to Kauai Vibrations with Tracy for the next 2 hours. So happy to be back here on Kauai and back in the seat here at Kauai Community Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in, and thanks Paul and David for another wonderful edition of In the Garden on the Farm. Sounds like a great workshop up at the Kauai Food Forest this weekend, so hope you can make it to that. And this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Heaven on Earth Starts, Kauai Marine and Mower, and the Mankind Project.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday morning market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at Heaven on Earth Starts.